God's Plan for Evil and Sin by Steve Martin. Chapter 1 of 4, Getting the Words Right. If God is all-powerful and all-good, why does so much evil and suffering exist in the world? For many, this is not just a philosophical puzzle, but a deeply personal question, a barrier to faith, and a source of profound doubt. It is a question that matters, perhaps more than any other. This guide explores a perspective drawn directly from scriptural analysis that offers an answer different from what is commonly taught. It presents a central, challenging truth. Evil and sin are not accidents or failures in God's plan, but are necessary, temporary parts of His much larger purpose. They are the dark background against which He intends to reveal the breathtaking brilliance of His ultimate goodness, wisdom, and love. To understand this, we must first redefine key terms like evil and sin according to their original scriptural meanings. The languages of the Bible make crucial distinctions that are often lost in modern translation. By recovering this clarity, we can begin to make sense of difficult concepts and discover a God who is not locked in a struggle with a rival power, but is completely and sovereignly in control of all things. Our journey begins by clearing up common misunderstandings, starting with the very meaning of the word evil. Getting the words right. Before we can ask why evil and sin exist, we must first understand what the Bible means by these terms. The original languages of the scriptures draw sharp distinctions that are often blurred in modern translations. Clarifying the biblical definitions of evil, sin, and human nature is the essential first step to understanding God's intricate and purposeful plan. What the Bible means by evil. In modern thought, the word evil is almost always synonymous with something morally wicked or sinful. Scripture, however, reveals a very different meaning, a non-moral definition. In the Hebrew scriptures, the word most often translated as evil is ragag. Its root meaning is not primarily about morality, but about effect. It describes an act that shatters, breaks, or brings calamity and distress. It is an action that causes harm, trouble, or misery, but it is not inherently sinful. This distinction is vital for understanding many difficult passages of Scripture. Here are a few examples that illustrate this non-moral definition of evil. Pharaoh's ill-favored kine, cows. In Pharaoh's dream, Genesis 41, the seven lean and ugly cows are described using the Hebrew word for evil. They were a sign of coming calamity for Egypt, a famine, but the cows themselves were not morally bad. An evil spirit from Yahweh. The Bible states that an evil spirit from Yahweh troubled King Saul, 1 Samuel 16:14. This spirit brought distress upon him, but it came directly from God, demonstrating that evil in this sense is not from a satanic source and is not necessarily sinful. God's declaration, I create evil. In Isaiah 45:7, God Himself states, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. In this context, evil is contrasted with peace and clearly refers to calamity, hardship, or adversity, not sin. This distinction is preserved in the Greek translation of the Scriptures, the Septuagint, which uses the word kakos for calamity, but reserves the word poneros for evil that carries a moral, wicked taint. The crucial distinction. In the Bible, evil is an act that can bring hardship and trouble, but it is not automatically sinful. This distinction is confirmed in Scripture, which says that a king sinned in doing evil, 1 Kings 16:19, demonstrating that an act can be an evil, a calamity, without necessarily being a sin, a failure to meet God's standard, and that the two concepts are distinct. This is crucial, as it allows us to understand how the Bible can say that God creates evil without making Himself sinful. He is the creator of calamity, but He Himself cannot sin. Now that we have a clearer picture of evil as calamity, we can explore the distinct but related concept of sin, understanding sin as missing the mark. While the Bible defines evil as calamity, it defines sin in a completely different way. The most descriptive picture of sin's meaning comes not from a theological treatise, but from a vivid story about ancient warfare. In Judges 20:16, we read of 700 left-handed men from the tribe of Benjamin, each of whom could sling stones at a hairbreadth and not sin. The original Hebrew word translated here as sin literally means to miss the mark. These men were such perfect shots that they never missed. Sin, therefore, is fundamentally about failure. This definition is powerfully reinforced by the Apostle Paul in Romans 3:23, "All sinned and are wanting of the glory of God." To sin is to fall short of God's perfect standard, to fail to reach the target of His glory. This definition is broad enough to include not only heinous crimes, but also simple mistakes, errors, and any instance of falling short. It is a failure, whether large or small, to perfectly reflect God's character. The difference between these two concepts is fundamental to understanding God's plan. Evil is an act that shatters, breaks, or brings calamity. It is not inherently moral or immoral, like drought or a plague. Sin is a failure, a mistake, or missing the mark. It is falling short of God's standard, like disobeying a direct command. If sin means falling short, it forces a crucial question about human design. Is our very nature bad? Human nature is not naturally bad. A common theological idea is that humanity possesses a sinful nature, an inborn instinct that drives us toward wrongdoing. This phrase, however, is not found in the scriptures. Scripture reveals that human nature, our basic instinct, is good and in harmony with God's law. The Apostle Paul, in his indictment of the human race in the book of Romans, repeatedly uses nature as a standard for what is right, not what is wrong. He describes unnatural acts as being against nature, Romans 1:26, which implies that nature itself is the standard of what is correct. He observes that people without the law sometimes do by nature the things required by the law, Romans 2:14, showing that human instinct can lead to good actions. He explains that conscience works with nature to bear witness against wrongdoing, acting as an internal confirmation of our natural sense of right and wrong. The true source of humanity's problem is not a sinful nature, but a state of mortality. Since Adam's offense, humanity has been severed from the fullness of divine life. Our problem is a state of mortality, a deficiency in spiritual vitality that makes sin inevitable. A useful analogy is found in the plant world. Thorns are essentially undeveloped branches, stunted growths that appear due to a lack of sufficient vitality to develop into their proper form. In the same way, sin is a product of our lack of full spiritual life. With a clearer understanding of these foundational ideas, we can now explore the most profound question of all. Why would a perfect God intentionally design a universe that includes calamity, failure, and death? Having the correct definitions for these key terms is the key to unlocking the rest of the puzzle of God's magnificent plan. To be continued.